Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court. I'm Brad Anderson, and I represent the appellant and the plaintiff, June Greiner. I hope to reserve about 2 minutes if I can, and I'll be watching the shot clock here as I know it ticks down. Labeling her as an octogenarian who must have been in shock or confused by the 9 IRS agents in SWAT gear who broke down her front door, or the judge believing, based solely on written declarations, that she otherwise lacked the mental state to properly perceive that the men at her front door were actually officers instead of burglars, the district court disregarded Mrs. Greiner's version of events, violating most of the well-established principles of the rules of summary judgment. The trial court chose to draw every inference against Ms. Greiner and determined that her version of events was not believable or that she was incapable because of her age or because of the shock of the moment of having 9 IRS agents break through her door, that she could not perceive what was occurring right before her, even though she was present and could witness or at least provide a version of what occurred.
But if I read what she said, it seems to me she says she was working in front of a computer, right?
Yes.
She had the television and it was on in the family room?
Yes.
And then she says, I can normally hear, but I didn't hear this.
What she said, Your Honor, was the only thing she heard was a big bang at her front
door.
Okay,
so then she didn't say it didn't happen. She just said, I didn't hear anything more than a bang.
A big bang that she thought was a rock hitting her front door.
So if she doesn't say it didn't happen, then how is it that the judge shouldn't take the facts as alleged by your opposition as true?
Every witness is presumed to tell the truth.
I understand that, but I'm saying that's why I ask you the questions I did. Seems to me I'm trying to look at her affidavits, look as best I can. It says she was working at her laptop, she was in a breakfast area, the television was on normal volume, she heard a loud bang. She didn't say they didn't do what they say they said. She doesn't know. She didn't hear it.
Your Honor, we agree that there was something the officers did at the front door that caused her to believe that there was something happening at her front door.
You agree that there was a loud bang. That's the best you can because that's the best she heard, right?
Yes.
And then she says she didn't hear anyone knock before or after the loud bang. She heard no one say they had a warrant or that they had wanted me to answer the door.
Correct.
But she does agree, does she not, that she went to the door and looked out the window.
The side window, yes.
Right. And then she went back to her kitchen.
Yes.
So when she looked out the window, she saw all these people out there, and because she had a boy who had knocked on her house before and told her a sprinkler wasn't working and thought that was a burglar, she thought this was a burglar and she was going to call somebody.
She had a perception that what was happening to her was different than what actually was happening to
her.
Well,
I guess, again, I then say give her all intentments of the fact. The best I can tell is what she did hear was a loud bang, but I cannot say that this other stuff did not happen. All I can say is she didn't hear it.
She says she would have been able to hear it. It's her house. How long has she lived in the house?
Over 20 years. They built the house.
What did her expert say about if there had been a knock and announce, she should have been able to hear it? What did the expert say?
We did all these, even videotaped, and he said from her dining room table, which is just around the corner from the front door, with the TV playing the volume she said it was, she could clearly hear it. She could also clearly hear voices at the front door. So from her position sitting, and then we also reenacted it when she got close to the door, you can hear voices coming through the door without even shouting.
So it seems to me the problem, because I share Judge Smith's concern, it's a little bit of a mind teaser. It's almost proving the negative. But your view is that summary judgment should not have been granted.
Absolutely.
The difficult part for me, and I'm going to ask both lawyers the same question, I think the judge's decision pivots on the conclusion that no reasonable juror could decide that there wasn't a knock and announce. But why couldn't a reasonable, I'll ask you both, I'm not clear why a reasonable juror couldn't believe the expert and this woman. Well, forgive me, your client's name, I don't mean to
June Greiner, that's
Greiner,
okay.
Forgive
June
me.
Greiner. Yeah, she's 85 now.
That's the issue.
Yeah, so the judge...
So if I turned my back, this is my hypothetical for both of you, if I turned my back on both of you right now, and then tomorrow I said... signed a declaration saying that I hollered at you, both my back turned so you couldn't see me, would you be competent to testify about whether or not I hollered at you?
I'm present, right? I'm present. I'm just as present as you are.
Is that a yes?
Yes. Yes. The answer is yes.
Because you didn't perceive it with your ears. That's your position. It's not a matter of sight. It's a matter of you didn't perceive it.
Yes. And to squarely answer your question is if it's your obligation to make sure before you have a dynamic entry into my house that a reasonable person on the inside of that house can hear you, then my testimony about what I heard is relevant. And every inference, when I say, look at...
Relevant. It's relevant. It just seems... Forgive me for interrupting. But there's also, I think, 9 declarations from officers saying that they knocked and announced. So the jurors might decide that they believe the officers as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I could lose the case, but It's up to me to prove my case, and it's up to the jury to decide which version. You don't count.
Your time is ticking. Let's see if there are other questions.
I guess. Go ahead. Did you have a question?
If the record is that she's sitting in there and she heard something at the front door.
Yes.
Then she went to the door.
Yes.
And she saw talking. She tries to say in an affidavit that changes her deposition that it was mumbling, but she actually heard words, according to her deposition, which she is stuck with under the law. Then she returned to the kitchen. Then the door was broken in. That seems to me to be fully consistent with everything that is in the agent's affidavit, and that no reasonable juror could conclude on the basis of her testimony alone. Expert or other, including the experts, that the knock and announce didn't happen. And that's the issue, is whether it happened. So can you address that problem for me?
Yeah, and I'm going to try to do it in about 40 seconds, but I can understand this is very important to you. So the testimony of the 9 officers and June Greiner are different in this regard. Again, we don't dispute there was something that happened at the front door that drew her there. The question is whether the officers reasonably announced their presence, that is who they were and why they were there and what they were demanding of her.
Or whether the first thing she heard was the battering ram.
Right. I don't know.
She admits that the battering ram occurred after she came back into the kitchen, right?
No. She can't say what happened on that side.
The door broke down after, as I understand the record, the door was broken down after she turned and returned to the kitchen to make the telephone call. Am I wrong about that?
Her version is what Daniel's version is. I knocked and announced one time. Then he says, I waited 40 seconds. The other officer said it happened right away. Daniel says, I waited 40 seconds because I knew it was an elderly woman.
I'm asking you this. I think I understand that. I know I understand the record to be this, and if I'm wrong, I'd like to know why.
Sure.
That the battering ram applied, came through the door. After she had gone to the door, heard the mumbling, came back around and went to the kitchen for the telephone, right?
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes.
Okay, so then that's consistent with the officer, isn't it?
No.
Okay.
Because, like I said, the officer said she came to the front door. I had eye-to-eye contact with her. She says I came to the front door, did not have any eye-to-eye contact, She said, as the moment I saw that these were burglars, I turned and started to run away. And the moment I started to turn away, my door came crashing in. She got to the door in 7 seconds. I believe it's just as reasonable, and I'm entitled to the inference in my favor, it's just as reasonable that the officers rammed it the first time. That's the slam she heard. She gets to the door, because it took them 7 seconds just to get the back officer to the front. She gets to the front door, and then she thinks it's a home invasion, runs, and then goes and calls the police. Never hears any clear voice, which she should have, because she was in a position. And you got this Officer Daniels who's saying, I had eye-to-eye contact her. I talked to her in a normal voice. She's saying, nobody talked to me. And as soon as I got to that front door, I turned and ran. And the moment...
But just a minute. You're making your great jury argument, but you're really not answering his question, which is where I was going. It seems to me that I'm trying to put the facts which are in the affidavits to determine whether they're conflicting or they aren't. And his question was pretty simple. She heard a bang. She went to the door, to the window. Whether she had a conversation or not, that might be disputed. But the fact that she went and they hadn't already banged down the door, and she went back to her kitchen thereafter, says that there was something before the loud bang that was the breakdown of the door, based on her testimony.
I'm just
trying to say you can argue what you want, but you've only got what your client has said. And your client says there was something, bang, that did this.
And your Honor, with all due respect, you're making a conclusion. You're making an inference that the officers were able to ram the door. And they said it took multiple times to hit it, that somehow they were able to do that during the time before she could get to the door and turn. And those are inferences that need to be drawn in my client's favor, not the officer's favor.
If we draw the inference in your client's, and you're over time, so if you draw the inferences in your client's, because we're all struggling with the same thing, if we draw the inferences in your client's favor, is the first thing she heard the battering ram and the second thing the battering ram?
I believe so, but it doesn't matter because either scenario works because the officers have the burden of proving that they properly announced. Not knocked. They did that. They got her to the door. But did they ever clearly articulate to a person, you know, something obviously went wrong, and the person, it should have been, if they did it right, she was a person that should have heard it. And she didn't hear it, and she's reasonable. Thank you, Your Honor.
You're over time. Thank you for your argument.
Does he have any time left?
We'll give him 1 minute because we took so much. Let me just tell you, we'll give you 1 minute on rebuttal because we took so much of your time with our questions. Good morning.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. I'm Teal Miller on behalf of the 9 agents who've been sued in their individual capacity in this case. The key question here is whether, given that the officers have come forward with direct evidence that would meet their burden at trial, whether what plaintiff has come forward with in opposition to summary judgment is sufficient to create a dispute of fact. And it's not. And Judge Payne, your question about whether the noise she heard, the first noise she heard, could have been a knock or could have been a battering ram, whether there's a dispute of fact about that, the answer to that question is clearly no, based on her own testimony.
Why is that? That's what we're struggling with, please.
Okay. So she says, just first of all, she acknowledges that all she has as evidence that the first thing she heard was the first hit on the door was an assumption. She says, I assume that when they come up, they threw the instrument at my front door, and that's what brought me running. That's at page 323 of the record. So she acknowledges
that?
It's an assumption.
She can just testify about her own perception. So she heard something. Please go to the question that we've all asked.
Yes. So the uncontradicted evidence shows that no more than 7 seconds passed between the first hit to the door and the second hit to the door, and that there were only 2 hits to the door. Ms. Greiner herself, at page 336 of the supplemental excerpts of records, says she has the door and there were 2 marks on it.
Right, and so that's exactly the point that we're grappling with. There were 2 hits to the door. We know the second one bashed the door in, right? Or do
yes.
I have that wrong? Okay.
No, yes. That's correct.
Okay, so why isn't it possible, and I'm just really keying in on this, why is it possible that no reasonable juror could find in her favor if they believed that the first thing she heard, the first hit, was the battering ram. I don't know if it's called a battering ram, but the first attempt to bash in the door. Why is that not possible, please?
It's not possible because based on her own testimony, there simply wasn't time. I want to give you the citation to the record about the sort of maximum amount of time that could have passed between the two hits. This is at pages of the supplemental excerpts of record. Officer Gleason said he immediately broke down the door. At pages 277, 198, and 118. 118 is the ER, and the other two citations are the supplemental excerpts, is the only testimony about how long it took. One officer said there was about a second pass between the two hits, and the two other officers said between 3 and 7.
We have to view all the facts in the light most favorable to Ms. Greiner. So yes. What does she say, please?
She doesn't estimate, she doesn't give an estimate of the amount of time between the two noises she heard, but she does tell us that during that time her attention was drawn to her door. She got up, she ran down her hallway, which is 35 feet long. She got to within 5 feet of her door. She saw what she called a riot, a mass of men, a ruckus. She decided that they were burglars who'd come to attack her and turned around.
But we're getting back afield. So we were narrowing, and that was encouraging to me. But now we've got two hits.
Yes.
And my answer was, why couldn't the first one have been a battering? And you said...
Because there wasn't time.
It was time. And so you're getting that from where? If not from...
Her testimony.
Well, I just asked you that, and you said she didn't give a matter of time.
But she told us what she did between the two noises she said she heard.
A minute ago, you said 7 seconds is the most... And where'd you get that?
From the officer's testimony. There are four officers who gave an estimate between 1 and 7 seconds.
So is it your argument, forgive me for interrupting, but I'm really trying to focus this, is your argument that given what she says she did, she couldn't have done those things within 7 seconds?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, that's exactly right, Your Honor.
Okay.
And that's why I was going over what she did between the two noises that she heard.
Just trying to understand your argument.
I guess the problem comes, and I'm trying to be careful here too, Scott v. Harris, which is a United States Supreme Court case, says when opposing parties tell two different stories, one of which is blatantly contradicted by the record so that no reasonable jury could believe it, a court should not adopt that version.
That's right, Your Honor.
My worry is that this record is not blatantly contradicted.
Well, Your Honor, I in Scott v. Harris, there was a videotape.
I understand
of the search.
It. I understand what there was. I'm not even looking at the enactment. I'm looking at the affidavits because I'm not sure the enactment helps at all. But when I'm looking at the affidavits, I'm trying to say to myself, is her version thereof blatantly contradictory?
Well, I think I acknowledge we don't have a videotape, but I think we've gotten as close as we possibly could, given that we have the before action report, which says there will be a knock and announce agent. We have somebody who was signed to knock and announce. We have 9 witnesses who directly witnessed this, who said it happened. And then we have the next day a report that says it happened.
Well, but that just says there's a lot of evidence on your side. But the honest truth is that if I'm looking at this on summary judgment, you can have all the witness and all the evidence in the world on your side. If there's any evidence on the other side, I have to give credit to the other side.
Well, even if you don't think that we're in Scott v. Harris because we don't have a videotape, it is still the case based on Liberty Lobby and based on this court's decisions construing it, you have direct evidence. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I interrupted you. Forgive me. Go right ahead.
When you have direct evidence for one side and all you have on the other side is an assumption, which is what we have here, or inferences.
We have direct evidence on their side. In fact, I read it very carefully to your opposition. We have the fact that she was in the breakfast area working on her laptop. The television was on normal volume. She heard a loud bang. She did not hear anything else, even before or after the loud bang. And she heard nobody say they had a warrant. She had nobody say they wanted her to come to the door. She went to the door. She would have heard it if it would have happened.
Well, Your Honor, she...
That's the question.
I don't think
she would have heard it if it would have happened.
The critical fact here is that she did hear something. And she says, I assume it was the first hit of the ram.
Well, what's wrong with that? Well, think about this vis-a-vis our own case law in the Mina case. You haven't talked about the Mina case.
So the Mina case is about a situation in which officers are in inside the house in the person's bedroom while she's still asleep before she comes in.
And she's asleep. And she said she heard nothing. And we found an issue of fact here about whether there was a knock and announce.
And critically in Mina, the court said there's an issue of fact about whether there was a knock and announce or whether there was a sufficient knock and announce. And so the court was taking account of the fact that there was a material dispute about, even if you think that there's some evidence that the officers announced, whether it's reasonable at 7 a.m. to announce in such a way that you actually can be in someone's bedroom before they wake up when their room is right by the front of the door. This is a different situation. This is a plaintiff who was awake.
You're adding a lot in that wasn't in the Mina case.
I don't think I am, Your Honor. It specifically says...
Read the Mina case. But anyway, you think it's not a problem for you and your time's ticking, so I don't want to get out of your way, but I wanted to give you a notice that I'm concerned about the Mina case.
Well, I think Martin against City of Oceanside is actually closer on point, because that's a case where there's no dispute that the officers did something that was adequate to call the plaintiff's attention to their presence at the door. And then the question is...
As Judge Smith indicated... We're trying to be really conscientious about these burdens, and if we view the evidence and the fact most favorable to her, the first thing they may have done is try to bash the door in, not knock and announce.
And again, it's our position, it's the officer's position, that she doesn't have evidence of a sufficient caliber and quantity that it was the first hit on the door with the battery ram as opposed to her knock, because the rest of the record contradicts the possibility.
I appreciate your argument, and I really appreciate the clarification. It's very helpful to me. Judge, do you have more questions?
I was concerned about Mina, too. That seems to me to be your biggest stumbling block, is the Mina decision. And you say that the difference is that in Mina, the question was really, was it loud enough, not whether there was a knock. Is that right?
The court said both things. It said there's a material dispute of fact as to whether there was a knock and announce or whether it was adequate. And what I'm saying is, in those circumstances, that got them past summary judgment. Here, we have more evidence, and we're much closer to Martins versus City of Oceanside or the Seventh Circuit's decision in Molina, where we have a distracted plaintiff who nevertheless heard something and is speculating that what she heard wasn't a knock, even though all the direct evidence says that it was.
Not all the direct evidence.
All the direct evidence, Your Honor. There is indirect evidence that it wasn't, but there's no direct evidence that it was.
Do you have another question?
We ask that the judgment be affirmed.
Thank you for your argument. We're going to put 1 minute on the clock for you, counsel, because we took up so much of your time.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate that.
May I ask you one quick question?
Yes, Your Honor.
Is it correct that the only thing on appeal is your first cause of action, which is what you seem to say at page 1 of your brief?
I believe so, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Sorry. Claim.
Your Honor, I will fail my client if I don't convince you of something in my 45 seconds I have. We keep focusing on the knock. The statute in the Fourth Amendment requires knock and announce. The one thing I agree with counsel, she said the issue is, was there a sufficient knock and announce? Bam, bam, bam. Police warrant. Open the door. You have to have both. The law requires both. Somebody's at my front door, and the officer's duty is to clearly announce who it is. And if I don't convince you, the knock was there. She somehow got to the door. It's like that other case, Keene, that we cite too. They heard something hit their deck. They go down there, and they see a guy with a rifle. They didn't doubt that the officers were at the front door, and they were drawn there. The question was, would a reasonable person have heard what the officer said? And
you're not questioning that there was a knock now. You're saying there was. They've met that burden. The issue is that it was the announce. Was there an announce?
They have to do both.
But you just said they've met the knock, and I'm trying to see if you agree that what occurred here was the knock.
I don't think they properly knocked, but that's an inference. I think they did something to cause her to go to the front door. That satisfies it. You can ring the stinking doorbell to get them there. What they did, though, is they never clearly announced. She was present, just like the lady sleeping next door. If they had done it, she would have heard it, and I'm entitled to the inference, because she, just like the lady sleeping behind the closed door next to it, I know I got to go, that she would have heard it. She did not hear it. She was in the best position to know whether the officers did a sufficient knock and announce. They didn't, and I'm entitled to that inference. We're asking that you remand it. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both for your exceptionally helpful arguments. We appreciate your help with this important case. We'll go on to the next case on the calendar, please. 16-71752, Samad versus Sessions.